So, on a serious note, have either of you gotten your stimulus check yet?
Welcome to Chop Shop.
I have.
Watch. I have not.
Shop.
So, I checked today. They say you're not supposed to check more than once a day because it only refreshes today, or on the day. And I got a new message today, and I'm gonna get one.
Hooray!
Despite all those terrible things I said about the dumbass in chief. But this is not a political or monetary podcast. Welcome to Season 6, Episode 21 of Cinema Chop Shop. This is a movie podcast that concedes that remakes are going to happen, so why shouldn't movie buffs
like us
decide who is recast in those iconic roles? My name is...
John Travolta.
Uh-huh.
A.K.A. Thank God It's Travis.
Nice. And I'm joined remotely by my co-host and co-producer... Shauna Summer, a.k.a. the Shauna Doors.
Oh, my God.
We are also extremely excited to welcome back to the show returning guest, Chelivia Newton-John.
Yes.
A.k.a. Behind the Chelvet Rope.
Yes.
Further description of the show, the tagline at the top says, watch, chop, retrofit, because essentially that's what we do. We watch older movies in advance, sometimes classic films with iconic actors, and sometimes stinkers. We've got a couple tire fires today. Then we retrofit them by tweaking the design with new parts. And we're not actually in favor of remakes and reboots and sequels and all of that current cinematic atmosphere. This is more of an exercise in satire and irony. We try to be funny.
And sometimes we get down.
We do the hustle. So can I ask you guys a question at this point?
Yes.
This is not a serious question like the first one. But can you point out an example of a bad or unnecessary remake?
I can. 1998 Godzilla.
Okay, now is this the one with Matthew Broderick?
Yes.
And the Puff Daddy remix of Led Zeppelin?
Was that part of that?
Yes, it was.
Anyway, the Godzilla movies.
And so, Chelsea, what's your example?
I don't have one.
Okay, so the one I'm gonna say is it's kind of vague, but the 90s Robert De Niro Frankenstein movie?
Oh.
It's not as good as really any of the previous Frankenstein movies. It was a stinker.
Agreed.
All right, so that brings us into our first segment, which is movie news. And we're going to start it off with just a couple of RIPs this week, not nearly as catastrophic as the week we had previously. But an actor named Tom Lester has died at the age of 81 due to complications from Parkinson's disease. And what do we know Tom Lester from, Sean?
Most people would know him from the Green Acres TV series.
Uh-huh.
But he was also in the Benji movie, or movies, as well as Gordy, where he also acted with a pig.
Huh. That's an interesting typecast he had going there. Next, we've got Sam Clayton Jr., who was not an actor or filmmaker, but a member of the Jamaican bobsled team that inspired Cool Runnings Man. He has died from coronavirus. So rest in peace and rest in power to those two gentlemen. Next up, we've got AMC Theaters are sued by a Florida landlord for not paying rent. Now, I imagine that this probably isn't the only example of that.
Oh, no. This is bound to happen plenty more times with plenty more places.
Next up, on a brighter note, the our beloved film distribution company A24 is holding an auction of some of their props from movies like Midsommar and Uncut Gems, and they're donating the proceeds to charity to help fight COVID-19. So I thought that was pretty awesome.
Oh yeah, it's very cool.
Now this next one you brought to my attention, the South by Southwest and Amazon have announced a shorts heavy free virtual festival lineup. Tell me about this.
The South by Southwest deal, they reached an agreement with Amazon. They're going to be showing a lot of the entrants in the festival this year, especially several of the short films. And I believe that starts on the 27th, if I'm remembering correctly.
Yes.
Awesome. So that'll be Monday.
Yep.
Very cool. So next I've got Reebok celebrates Alien Day with new USCM inspired shoes. Now, a couple of questions. USCM, is that the company that they work for?
No, it's the Colonial Marines, okay. Whatever that abbreviation stands for.
Okay. And then why was Alien Day this week?
I don't know. That part I wasn't really clear on.
Was there like a date referenced in the first film that comes up here? Kind of like the Back to the Future thing?
Yeah, probably.
Speaking of changes in time, the Batman, the new Batman movie, has been delayed yet again due to COVID-19. And I'm not sure how far they pushed it back this time, but I think it's a while.
Yeah, probably next year at this point.
Roger Corman wants your short film for his quarantine film festival. I think this is pretty great. We've talked a lot about Roger Corman on the show, and this is so in his wheelhouse of something to do.
Oh, yeah. Very cool and awesome that he's stepping up to host a virtual film festival.
Next, we've got the Kickstarter documentary In Search of Tomorrow will explore 80s sci-fi.
Yes, this is the director of the documentary
In Search of Darkness.
Thank you. Yes, the 4.5-hour epic documentary of 80s horror.
Okay.
Has gotten into the sci-fi game, and I'm very excited for this.
I'm so excited.
So are we to take the indication that this will also be a sprawling epic?
I hope so.
It should be.
Okay. Next question. Can I count it as two movies?
No.
Damn it. All right. Finally, Back to the Future screenwriter closes a plot hole amid renewed debate. And I think that the guy's name is Bob Gale, the screenwriter. And he was addressing some recent tweets, I think, from Guardians of the Galaxy guy, James Gunn.
Right.
Talking about what the difference between a perfect movie and a movie that you love might be. And he was saying that he loves Back to the Future, but it could be considered imperfect. And he said, why don't George and Lorraine remember Marty, a.k.a. Calvin Klein, when they run into him later? And the explanation that the screenwriter gave was that it was decades ago, and he was only around them for about a week, and they're teenagers. And so they might maybe think that it was interesting that their son looks like somebody that they ran into in the past, but it would probably just be nothing more than that.
Yeah, I agree with that. I don't remember anybody from high school.
Yeah, I barely remember people from college. So let's go ahead and wait for the phone to ring. Yes, there it is. That's time for the Department of Corrections Department with Chief Corrections Officer Dana.
You know, maybe it's just me, but Eugene Levy got kind of dishy once he started combing his hair like an old Hollywood actor. I think I've been alone too long. Good job, Travis, pronouncing Donald correctly. I think I might have helped with that in my last call, though. The only real correction I have is that Jane Mansfield's daughter and the star of Law & Order, SVU, pronounces her first name Mariska. That's it. Stay safe, and don't go bowling in Georgia.
I appreciate that, Dana, and we always appreciate your hard work. And once again, I appreciate that you didn't notice that I incorrectly announced last week's episode as episode 21, because this is, in fact, episode 21, but that was just my bad. So that will close the doors on the Department of Corrections Department for this week, bringing us to the theme of the episode. And I expect some funky background music right here. In celebration of the 43rd anniversary of the grand opening of the legendary New York City disco Studio 54 on April 26, 1977, we're talking disco movies.
Woo!
And the two of you were quite persistent that we needed to get this done and get it done soon.
Sean made me watch Thank God It's Friday, and planted the seed that we need to have a disco episode, and I was so pumped. And then I started watching the documentary 54 that you had watched and noticed the date, and I was like, that's it, we're doing it.
Nice. Yeah, I liked that documentary.
I did too. I thought it was great.
So I guess the next thing we should do is go into our midnight double feature segment. I'm sorry, the cats are fighting in the background. They just want to party all night. So the midnight double feature is where each of us on the panel select two films that we believe are related to our topic at hand, and we talk about why they would make a good double feature. So, Chelsea, are you ready to go with your disco double feature?
I am. I did talk about this a couple episodes ago in the movie Marathon, and it's from 1979. It's Skate Town, USA, where they say introducing Patrick Swayze. It's pretty great. He's part of a gang. His name is Ace. He's like the bad guy. There's a little roller disco competition that goes on. And he has a sweet, sweet dance with a belt. It's amazing. Everyone should YouTube it. And
awesome.
They should have won, in my opinion.
Rooting for the bad guys.
Well, he was clearly better. And I'm going to pair that with a movie from 2011. And I found this on YouTube when I was sick and I was just searching disco movies. This came up. It's a Canadian parody film, and it's called Roller Town.
Canada.
It's great. It's about this, I don't know, this guy that owns a roller disco, and in this town, like, roller skating is everything. They have the conservatory of roller disco. I mean, it's a big deal, and all of this stuff goes down. It's really silly, but it's pretty funny, and there's a great song. There's a really good song.
Are you going to elaborate?
It's about time. It's about looking at your watch and figuring out what time it is. And he says it's a quarter to dick. It's a half past pussy.
Whoa.
It's fuck o'clock.
That's what the song says?
That's what the song says.
Awesome. So the connective tissue on your two movies is the roller disco thing.
I mean, kind of, but really the connective tissue is what I like to call beltography. Patrick Swayze has a sweet, sweet dance move with a belt. And the grandpa in this movie is ready to get down on anyone that defies him with his many belts that he wears.
All right. That sounds good. I had a question, though, and this is for either of you. Which came first, roller disco or roller derby?
Ooh.
Or were they contemporaries?
Only for Dana to figure out.
Yeah, I don't know.
All right. Sean, what are you thinking for your double feature?
All right. So we're going to go with 1976's Car Wash. And this kind of, to me, picks off the disco movie vibe. Even though this didn't take place at a disco, it did have that connection to music, the connection to that funky dance beat, as well as the guy, I think it may have been Franklin Ajayi, that was trying to score the tickets to the concert, the entire movie,
yeah,
on the radio call-in show. So very driven by that DJ culture, which will also play into my second feature. But for anybody who doesn't know Car Wash, the song Car Wash plays about four times in the movie.
And it's got George Carwash Carlin in it.
George Carlin's in it briefly as a cab driver. Richard Pryor's in it briefly as an evangelist, a funkadelic evangelist. Joel Schumacher wrote this movie, by the way.
No shit.
It's not really that great. I mean, it does address some things about race struggles and class struggles. And still kind of that overt racism in terms of I'm above you because you're black kind of thing.
Yeah.
That's definitely addressed in the film and is worth watching for that matter. But I'm following that up with a much more feel-good kind of flick. It's called Thank God It's Friday.
Yeah.
Good.
And Drink. And this is probably my favorite disco film. I may have mentioned it on the show when we were talking about Roller Town or what, Skate Town or whatever it was called.
Yes.
This was the first film that I ever saw on HBO. I was talking to my mother about it, and she remembers this very clearly. We laid a blanket out in the living room floor. My mom, my sister, who was just like probably a year old at that point, and me, we watched this film. And mom even remembers getting up to answer the phone and basically breaking her toe as she stubbed it on something going to the phone.
No.
Yeah, so the film has a lot of memories. It's a touchstone for us, but it's really cool. It's kind of a slice of life film about a disco, and everybody who wants to get into this really hot disco club and their individual subplots about their lives and how they fit into this whole thing. It's got Donna Summer. It's got Terry Nunn from Berlin, in case you didn't catch that.
Don't bury the lead.
And let's see, who we got? Jeff Goldblum and Deborah Winger, the Commodore.
You're so clumsy.
Yes, clumsy Deborah Winger. The Commodores are in this. This is a great flick. You should watch it. It's a lot of fun. And it kind of has that that fantastic soundtrack you would expect from a disco movie. It also has the lighthearted fun that you expect from disco. It doesn't try to get too heavy. It doesn't take itself too seriously.
It's pretty silly.
It is silly, but Jeff Goldblum is gorgeous in this movie.
Oh, so beautiful.
And it's a good one. You should check it out if you haven't.
I was cracking up at the husband of the girl that Jeff Goldblum is hitting on, how he gets kind of waylaid by that freak.
The dentist, yes.
And ends up just getting completely blitzed. All right, well, is it my turn?
Go.
All right, so I went with two movies that are from the same year. They're kind of looking back at the disco culture of the late 70s and very, very early 80s. They're both from 1998. And the first one is called The Last Days of Disco. And it was directed by Stuart Whitman. Nope. It was directed by Whit Stillman. And it's got a 73% on Rotten Tomatoes. And it's loosely based on his travels and experiences in various nightclubs in Manhattan, including Studio 54. The film concerns a group of Ivy League graduates falling in and out of love in the disco scene of New York in the very early 80s. It features Chloe Sevigny and Kate Beckinsale in the lead roles. And in terms of that director, he considers it the third film in his Doomed Bourgeois in Love series. And the first one was called Metropolitan from 1990, and the second one was Barcelona from 1994. And he was inspired to make this movie while he was shooting a discotheque scene for the movie Barcelona. So I'm bridging off of that to another movie from 1998. This one is not nearly as good of a movie. It's only got a 17% on Rotten Tomatoes, and it's called 54. And this is the dramatization of Studio 54, the famous club in New York City. And it was really hyped at the time.
People, I remember.
The marketing machine behind it was incredible. And it really kind of laid a stinky fart. But it's a 1998 American drama film about Studio 54. And it was written and directed by Mark Christopher, starring Ryan Philippe, Salma Hayek, Nev Campbell, and Mike Myers as Steve Rubell, the club's co-founder. So it's really just a kind of exploitation of the sex, drugs, and music culture that was going on, the culture of excess, and how the mighty fell quickly. And I think that looking back, Salma Hayek was probably my favorite part as the coat check girl who's trying to break big as a singer. But Mike Myers kind of went out of his wheelhouse for this one. They gave him like a prosthetic nose, and he was affecting the kind of effeminate nature of Steve Rubell. And it was just very different from coming right off of Austin Powers. So yeah, that's going to be my double feature, is two late 90s movies looking back on the New York disco scene.
Moist.
All right, so that brings us to our feature segment. And this is definitely the superior of the two that we're going to talk about today. It is from 1980. Unfortunately, it only has a 25% on Rotten Tomatoes. We're talking Xanadu, directed by Robert Greenwald. Now, it, on the surface, is more of a fantasy film slash musical slash love story. But it always gets lumped in with disco movies because it stars Olivia Newton-John, and there is the transformation of the old auditorium into a roller disco.
Well, also, the soundtrack is
ELO,
which yes. is a super duper roller disco kind of staple.
And Jeff Lynne makes a cameo in the movie.
Yay!
So the premise is, struggling artist Sonny Malone is trapped in a dull job painting album covers. He's literally painting enlarged versions of album covers, which it puts a nice timestamp on this movie. He is instantly attracted to Kira, played by Olivia Newton-John, an anonymous woman randomly photographed in the background of one of his assignments. But no one is able to identify her. Visiting the auditorium where the cover was shot, Sonny finds the mysterious beauty and ageless Greek muse who encourages him to team up with old-fashioned Danny McGuire, played by Gene Kelly, to build a roller skating disco.
It should be noted that Sonny Malone is played by Michael Beck.
Yes, Michael Beck.
Just prior to that was the lead in the film The Warriors.
Yes.
So you went from The Warriors, which is a life or death tough guy film, to this.
Very much more of a goofy role.
And he bears a striking resemblance to Heath Ledger, I think.
Yeah, I could see that.
And then the other thing we wanted to mention, Gene Kelly at 68 years old was still just dynamite.
Yeah, he had a lot of charisma still.
I mean, you've got that dance scene with him and Olivia Newton-John. You know, your eyes are supposed to be on Olivia Newton-John.
You can't take your eyes off of him.
Yeah, he is still smooth as silk.
I think my favorite part was the montage when they were shopping and we realized that Gene Kelly has a secret life as a pimp.
Oh, yes, he was pimping.
So I just wanted to ask, did Olivia Newton-John also play Danny McGuire's long-lost love in those flashbacks?
Yeah.
Okay, gotcha. So let's go ahead and get into the three roles. We've already mentioned them. We've got Kira slash Terpishore slash the waitress, played by Olivia Newton-John, who was 32 at the time. We've got Sonny Malone, played by Michael Beck, who was 31. And we've got Danny McGuire, played by Gene Kelly, who was 68 at the time. Chelsea, who's your pick for Kira?
So my actress is 33, and I think she's probably known more for television shows than movies, but she was in Black Christmas and When a Stranger Calls, and she most notably is on the TV show Arrow. I went with Kate Cassidy.
Okay.
That was David Cassidy. Oh. That feels important.
That's very disco-y.
Right?
Wait, he's who to David Cassidy?
Kate Cassidy is David Cassidy's daughter.
Cool. All right, I like it. Sean?
All right, I'm super excited for this pick. My pick is 32 years old. She was born in Australia.
Okay.
You know, Olivia Newton-John was born in England. She was considered to be Australian because her parents moved there when she was 5.
Yes.
Heath Ledger, she was the recipient of the Heath Ledger Scholarship in 2010. You would know her from films such as Dark Shadows, Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, The Neon Demon, but the reason I picked her, she played a muse of sorts in the film Professor Marsden and the Wonder Women.
Uh-huh.
I picked Bella Heathcote.
Very nice, dude. Yeah, that's cool. So mine, I'm trying to go with, because this movie, I've always heard about so how it's so laughable, and it was, but it almost seemed like it wasn't intentionally laughable. But my remake is going to be a full-on comedy, almost a parody of Xanadu. It's going to be called Spamadu.
I love it.
Not really. But my actress who's going to play the main role of Kira is 41 now. And she's done horror, she's done comedy, and she's done music. She was in the 2009 remake of The Last House on the Left. She's in a comedic horror called Hell Baby. She was in Under the Silver Lake. She's in Knives Out. And she's one half of Garfunkel and Oates. It's Ricky Lindholm.
Yeah, she's good.
Ricky Lindholm is going to be my Kira / Muse. Next up, we've got Sonny Malone, played by Michael Beck. He's a struggling artist. He's got all the goof troop value in the world. I found him very, very goofy. What about you guys?
Oh, very much so. And so are all of his goofy art friends.
Yeah. And
I mean, goofy in like the traditional sense, though. He was always kind of angry.
Yeah, like stick it to the man.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I don't know. I'll explain more with my recast.
Speaking of your recast, who did you pick for Sonny Malone, Chelsea?
Yeah, because I felt like he should have been a little bit more goofy, or I guess more lighthearted.
Uh-huh.
My actor is awesome, first of all. He was in Jurassic World, the Lego movie, all of that crap. I went with Chris Pratt. I just think he can bring something a little lighter rather than Malone's, I'm so angry.
Gotcha. And remind me who your pick for the first one was?
Kate Cassidy.
Kate Cassidy. All right. Gotcha. And next up, Sean.
My actor is also 31 years old. And he seems to be led by muses in a lot of his films, or at least Chasing After the Dream Girl. You would know him from Nick and Nora's Infinite Playlist, Juno, Scott Pilgrim vs. the World, and Superbad. I went with Michael Cera.
Michael Cera works. It was interesting earlier you were saying how much this actor resembled Heath Ledger to you. And I think that another actor from right around now, a contemporary actor, at the height of his powers, who bears a striking resemblance to Heath Ledger as well, is Joey Gordy-Levi's.
You guys shocked him.
I did not pick him, though, because he's not funny enough for this movie. My Sonny Malone is actually 47 now, but that doesn't matter because he's got a young heart. He was in Baby Mama. He's also in Search Party and the Lego Batman movie, along with Ricky Lindholm. He's got a small part in John Wick 3 Parabellum. And he's one of the co-hosts of How Did This Get Made? It's Jason Mantzoukas.
Oh, I love it.
What up, jerks?
I love that.
We got one more. We've got Danny McGuire. He is an aging showman. He hasn't been in the nightclub business since the 40s, but he still kind of has that itch. And he can still shake a leg. So, Chelsea, who's your pick for Danny McGuire, originally portrayed by Gene Kelly?
So the biggest thing for me was this person needs to be able to dance, and dance mm-hmm. well.
Mm-hmm.
And Sean pointed out that Patrick Swayze would be fabulous for this role, and I agree. And it kind of got me hung up because I kept thinking about Patrick Swayze, but I found one.
Who?
My actor was in Hollow Man, The Woodsman.
Uh-huh.
Blues. I went with Kevin Bacon.
He can dance.
He can dance.
That's pretty cool. I feel like he's come up recently.
Yeah, I cast him last week, I think.
I think I made a Six Degrees of Kevin Bacon joke.
Yep.
Yeah, I was on.
Okay, so 2 weeks ago. And Chelsea, it was rough not having you here last week, but I do understand that you needed some time to recover from the heavy metal Easter song.
Yeah, I did. That really, really messed me up.
She was shook.
I was.
And Sean, who's your Danny McGuire going to be?
All right, I too wanted to go with somebody who had the dancing chops, although no one will ever compare to Gene Kelly.
No.
But this guy does have an extensive song and dance run on Broadway, but most people would know him from films such as Don John, speaking of Joey Gordy Levi's,
mm-hmm.
Angels in the Outfield, as well as Who's the Boss? I'm talking about Tony Danza.
Tony Danza. Joey Gordy Levi's is also in Angels in the Outfield.
Well, that's right.
He's the main little kid.
That's right.
That's awesome, though. But I do like Tony Danza, especially right now, Tony Danza. He would be really good.
I agree.
All right. My Danny McGuire is 67 now, just slightly under the original age. He is a comedic icon. He was on SCTV. He was on Saturday Night Live. He danced a little bit in The Blues Brothers. He was in Ghostbusters, Dr. Detroit, and Trading Places. I'm going with Dan Aykroyd.
Oof.
I think that he's got just the right amount of nostalgia and twinkle in his eye. Probably because he's hammered on Crystal Skull vodka. So I'm going to give this one a soft recommend.
I'm going to call this a Xana don't.
Xana don't. And Chelsea?
I think you should watch it just for the music.
Yeah, well, I mean, we've all heard about this movie. I had never seen it before. And I think that I confuse it with other big, like, box office stinkers like Ishtar or things like that. But now that I've seen it, I won't make that mistake anymore.
Oh, and also you should watch it for Olivia Newton-John's pantsuit at the end.
Okay.
Yes, there's a great pantsuit in her montage of different outfits.
Nice. All right. So with that, we need to go ahead and go into intermission. But not before we say,
let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby.
And get ourselves some yayo.
All right, Chop Shoppers, thank you for bearing with us during intermission. This is your host, Travis, and I just have one question for you, Sean. What is one way we could make our podcast more prominent?
Oh, if our listeners would rate and review us on iTunes.
Rate, review, and subscribe to us on iTunes.
And pin your friends down and force them to do it.
Make them go ahead and do a review. We're very under reviewed.
Like make it a whole pyramid scheme. Get the people under them to do it and multiply.
A Podsy scheme.
Ooh, I like it.
Yes. You folks who are listening right now, it would be fantastic if while you're listening or right after, you don't have to stop the show. Don't stop the show. But if afterwards you could go to iTunes and give us a review or a rating, that would be awesome as well. Or on whatever podcatcher app it is that you're listening to us. We're on a few of them. And also, be aware of our online presence. We have a Facebook page. It's facebook.com/cinemachopshop. We're hosted natively online on Podbean. It's Cinema Chop Shop on Podbean. And our Twitter handle is @CinemaChopShop. We do a lot of stuff on there, like our movie marathon, where Sean consistently kicks my ass. Also, our email address is cinemachopshop@gmail.com. You can email us anytime. We check it frequently. The beers that we check in after intermission, you're about to find out about some, are always checked in on Untappd. That's UNTAPPD. And we are Cinema Chop Shop on there. Once again, thank you to you, the listeners. Thank you for tuning in and enjoy the rest of the show.
And now, on with the show.
All right, welcome back, Chop Shoppers. Thank you for bearing with us during the intermission. And Sean, there was something you wanted to mention to the listeners.
Before, right?
Yeah, I wanted to mention on Mike that Chelsea came dressed for the episode. She is wearing a shiny gold dress with a black and gold butterfly sequined poncho. So she's looking pretty fly.
I'm a disco princess.
Very nice. All right. And we should probably post that picture to the Cinema Chop Shop Instagram.
Okay.
And so do you have a beer to check in today, Sean?
I do. It's not really exactly on theme, but it is the only beer I had in the stash that had to do with dance. It's Jitterbug from Fonta Flora Brewing in North Carolina. It's an Appalachian wild ale made with local plums. I think we've had it before.
So Fonta Flora out of where in North Carolina?
Morganton.
Morganton, North Carolina. And you like to go up there for their special releases, right?
Yeah. They're good. They're cool guys, and it's a cool place.
Right on. Well, I am once again drinking Pixels New England Style IPA from Seminar Brewing. That's seminarbrewing.com. And while we enjoy those, let's go ahead and get into the 2020 movie marathon. It is the 115th day of the year, and I'm on number 164. I should say before we continue that this is a little competition slash cataloging thing that we do throughout the year. We try to watch as many movies as we can that are new to us, ones we have not seen before, and we check them in with the hashtag 2020 Movie Marathon on Letterboxd and Twitter. I check mine in under the Cinema Chop Shop handle. Sean, what's your handle on there?
A Windowless Van.
And Chelsea, are you checking them in online?
No, I'm pretty bad at doing that.
Okay, no sweat. So what number are you on, though, Chelsea?
117.
117. You crossed that century mark. And Sean, what number are you on?
157.
Okay, so I've got seven on you. You gained some ground on me this week.
I did.
And I think the reason for that is because on Monday, I watched six weed movies back to back. We watched, just to get in the spirit of things, we watched Up in Smoke, we watched Friday, we watched Dazed and Confused, we watched a couple more. I'm blanking on them right now, but the last one we watched was called Saving Grace, and it's with Craig Ferguson, like pre-Late Show Craig Ferguson, and it's pretty great. I'd seen it before, but it's one of Michelle's favorites in that genre.
Oh, okay, cool.
All right, so Chelsea, as our guest, what do you want to check in first this week?
I watched, what's it called? Saturday Night Fever with John Travolta.
The Disney movie.
Yeah, I'd never seen it before, and I watched it.
And how did you walk away from it feeling?
It was terrible. It was not good. It made me really sad. And it's pretty racist.
You should see the sequel.
What's that?
Staying Alive.
Oh.
Directed by Sylvester Stallone.
Oh, dear.
Now I can tell that you didn't listen all the way through last week's episode because that was the trivia question.
No, I did. I haven't.
Cold busted.
I didn't say I did.
All right. And so what number was that for you? Do you not have
103.
103. All right. Sean, what's your first check-in going to be?
This check-in will be number 153. This is the Banana Splits movie.
Okay. So it's like a culinary tale of confections and desserts.
No. For those of you old enough to remember, the Banana Splits were around in the era of a Sid and Marty Krofft style live television program for kids. This was a spoof of the Monkees. The Banana Splits were animals who were in a band. It was stupid. Anyway, this movie is a modern day slasher flick using those characters. It was a total yawn fest for me. The Banana Splits are animatronic robots that are kind of gone rogue, and they start killing everybody in the studio audience. that's there to watch their final recording. I think it would have been more relevant if the band of Rogue, it was a band of Rogue Chuck E. Cheese animatronics in a shut off Chuck E. Cheese restaurant. I think it would have been much more meaningful to today's audience.
But, oh, hell yeah.
Yeah, it was not good. I didn't really care for it at all.
So it's up to me. My number 155 is going to be Wendy from 2020. And it was awesome. It had been on my list. I was looking forward to it, but didn't quite realize what I was in for. It is a complete reimagining of the Peter Pan story. It's artistically stylized and ethereal. And the whole time I'm watching it, I'm like, man, this really reminds me of that movie, The Beasts of the Southern Wild, or Beasts of the Southern Wild from a few years back. And sure enough, I looked it up and it was the same director. His name is Ben Zeitlin, B-E-N-H-Z-E-I-T-L-I-N. I know that that's a story that's been redone over and over, but this one is definitely worth a watch. I think it was the first movie this year that I gave 5 stars to.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
All right, next up, Chelsea.
The next one is 108, and it's from 2014, The Skeleton Twins, with Bill Hader and Kristen Wiig.
Hell yes!
The best part of this movie is they do an epic lip sync to Jefferson Airplane's Nothing's Gonna Stop Us Now, or Starship, or whatever name that they go under. But it's amazing.
Yeah. The movie itself, though, what did you think?
I liked it. I thought it was great.
I thought that the sibling chemistry between him and Kristen Wiig was dead on.
The mix between drama and comedy, they handled it well. They did excellent. I loved it.
I bring that up. I bring that movie up almost every time I mention either of them.
Yeah, I slept on this one. I hadn't seen it. I'm glad I did.
So there's a really good song in that movie, and I'm gonna look it up. I can't remember what it is right now, but it's amazing, and I'm gonna look it up and tell you. But Sean, what's your next check-in?
All right, my next check-in is going to be number 154 for me, called Angel of Mine. This movie came out in 2019. It's an Australian flick starring Noomi Rapace, Luke Evans, and who else is it? Oh, Yvonne Strahovski. And it's an Aussie flick, a mother grieving the death of her daughter. She loses her grip on reality when she begins to think her daughter may still be alive. And it's pretty cool. It's got a twist, and not at all what I expected the movie to be. It was okay.
My next one is going to be a documentary. It's number 157, and it's called Never Surrender, a Galaxy Quest documentary. I am not one of those hardcore fans of Galaxy Quest. I think it's a little bit more geared towards Star Trek fans, but I did like the movie, and I can appreciate its cult status. I had no idea that Harold Ramis was originally the director, and he walked away over creative differences. But yeah, if you like that movie, or you like just documentaries about old comedies, I think it's pretty funny. You got one more, Chelsea?
And it's another one from 2014. It's Hungry Hearts with Adam Driver. It's kind of weird.
Hungry Hearts. From what year?
2014.
Tell me the premise. I may not have seen this.
So it's this couple that gets married. They have a baby. And the mom kind of goes on this holistic hippie kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
And essentially their kid starves because of it. And Adam Driver is kind of trying to reconcile with this.
Yeah, I saw that. It's sad.
Yeah, it is. It left me feeling really uncomfortable.
You know, since he hit the scene, he's been very prolific. Multiple pictures per year, so much so that he'll throw a few indie ones in there that'll kind of go under the radar.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, my next one is number 155. It's called Cicada Song. When Farmer Karen's Latina partner goes missing, as well as immigrant children in the area. Karen risks her life and digs deep into the mystery and uncovers something sinister. I'm not going to reveal what the twist is, but this movie is 100% plausible. That's a recommend for me. It's a 2019 movie, very small budget, small film house.
Say the name one more again.
It's called Cicada Song.
My final one for this week is another movie that I'm on a list for looking up. It's called Porno from 2019. It is a small indie horror film with a somewhat interesting premise. A group of theater workers uncover a mysterious old reel that unleashes a succubus upon them. And like I said, it was super indie, but fairly fun to watch. Does that do it for the movie marathon?
Yes.
That's it.
All right, let's go into the second part of our feature segment, The Recast Continued.
Part two.
Can you dig it?
I can dig it.
And the next movie I really can't dig because it's Can't Stop the Music from 1980. It's got a whopping 7% on Rotten Tomatoes.
That's way too much.
Directed by Nancy Walker. I did not put the premise for this into my notes. Sean, can you break it down for us?
Yeah, essentially this is a promo piece from EMI Records to loosely retell the formation of the Village People. You've got a young, aspiring music producer and his much older friend / housemate. And her connection to another record producer played by Paul Sand, by the way.
Yes, Paul Sand is in this. We did not recast him.
And they form a band along with their nerdy accountant and create the Village People.
We've got Steve Guttenberg at the age of 22 playing Jack Morrell. And is he the accountant?
No, he's the aspiring composer.
Gotcha. I did not pay very close attention to this movie. I apologize.
It's okay. It's okay.
And then we've got Samantha Sam Simpson, played by Valerie Perrine.
Yes, you would know her from the Superman movies.
Who was she in that?
She was Miss Teschmacher, Lex Luthor's main squeeze.
Oh, okay. And she was 37 at the time.
Yeah, that's what you say. I thought she was older than that.
Well, me and Chelsea outvoted you.
Yeah, I think I did my math wrong or something. When did this come out?
1980.
What day is it?
You're correct. You're correct.
Duh.
What day is it, though? Thank God it's Friday. All right, and then we've got the character Ron White. They call him Tater Salad. Played by Bruce at the time, now known as Caitlyn Jenner, 31 at the time. And I believe, Sean, you categorized it correctly when you said that in a movie with the Village People, Bruce Jenner was the gayest thing in it.
Yeah, and that's not a commentary on Bruce Jenner himself, just the way he
was. It's not a commentary on gayness. It's just... it's a really gay movie.
Yeah, and his costumes were super gay.
Yeah.
Again, the midriff top with the denim cutoffs, it was a sight to behold.
And then finally, we are going to recast the Village People as a group.
Yes.
So should we go ahead and get into it?
Let's do the nasty.
Let's do the hustle. You keep saying do the nasty. All right. First up is Jack Morrell, played by Steve Guttenberg, the Goot at 22. And Chelsea, who was your pick for this?
I picked somebody that was goofy and had sweet hair, obviously. He's a little bit older, 33. He was in The Spectacular Now, Fantastic Four, Whiplash. Oh, yeah. I went with Miles Teller.
Yes, indeed.
Mm-hmm.
Very good. I like him as an actor. And so maybe you're doing the same thing that I'm doing. I'm making this one more serious.
I don't think I'm purposefully trying to make it serious. I think I'm just trying to bring it down to earth. Also, I want to see Miles Teller in white jeans roller skating in the opening montage.
And somehow also wearing overalls?
Yes, twice. Once with a shirt, once without.
All right. And Sean, who is your pick?
All right. So this is a sort of loosely themed round for me. This actor is also 22 years old, although he hasn't made a film since 2016. He was in The Sitter, The Brothers Bloom, Where the Wild Things Are, and I Am Not a Serial Killer. I'm talking about a guy who aspires to make records. His name is Max Records.
Max Records. I don't know him.
That's I don't either.
It's the kid from Where the Wild Things Are.
Jesus.
Oh, okay. Unfortunate last name.
I know, right? Well, he wants to make Max Records.
I guess.
It's going to go down on his permanent record. Well, my pick is 21 now. And my Jack Morrell was in Charlie St. Cloud, but you don't, it's not who you think. He's in I Am Legend, but it's not who you think. He's in Wayward Pines, the TV show. And he's most well known these days as Wyatt on Ozark. His name is Charlie Tehan.
Love him.
T-E-H-A-N.
Super talented actor.
Yeah, he's good. And so like most of the movie, Steve Guttenberg has this like look of disbelief on his face. Like, what? I can't believe it. And so I think that this actor is gonna lean into that, but make it more like Oscar worthy. Next up, we've got Sam Simpson. And remind us what her character is, Sean.
Valerie Perrin. She's kind of a social butterfly, but
she was a model.
Yes, right. Yeah. She was a model. She's very well connected. She previously dated Paul Sand's character, Steve Waits, who was a record producer. So she's got the connections necessary to get Jack Morrell his record deal.
All right. And Chelsea, who did you find suitable for this role?
I found this character super just odd. The age difference between her and Guttenberg looked super obvious. It didn't really seem believable. Honestly, I think she was too old to play the part.
She was older than the rest of the cast, for sure.
I know, but even just with how the dynamic between the relationships were, it just felt disjointed. So I picked somebody who is a lot older as well, but still hot. I went with Jennifer Aniston.
Ah, okay. Sean, you were talking about the boyfriend and who played him, Paul Sand?
Yeah.
And did you say that he looked like Tim Curry from Rocky Horror in this?
No. Her best friend.
Lulu.
Lulu.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. Yeah. You said BFF, not BF.
Yeah, her BFF, Lulu. Look just like Tim Curry.
I loved Lulu, though. she was like, the best.
She looked like Tim Curry from Rocky Horror Picture Show.
All right, Sean, who is your Sam?
All right, I went with a 42-year-old actress who knows a thing or two about music. You would know her from Armageddon, Lord of the Rings, The Strangers. I went with Liv Tyler. She was also in Empire Records and That Thing You Do.
Very much, yes.
There.
Well, my actress is, she hasn't done a lot of movies lately. She has done some TV series. I think she might be on Angie Tribeca or something. She's 36 now. She was in Deep Impact. She was in Never Been Kissed. She was in Joyride. And she was in The Glass House. Her name is Lily Sobieski. Was that who you thought, Chelsea?
Yes.
Yeah, so she, she's always, to me, kind of had an aesthetic somewhere between, like, Jennifer Lawrence and Jewel.
Yeah, absolutely.
But she hasn't been doing a lot of big movies, and I don't know why.
I don't either. She was a staple in the, like, mid to late 90s.
Late 90s, early 2000s, yeah.
Yeah.
She she might be hard to work with. We don't know. Next up, we've got Caitlyn Jenner / Bruce Jenner as Ron White. And his role in this fiasco,
He's the uptight accountant slash.
I thought he was like a lawyer.
Business attorney.
Like
yeah.
And so with that in mind, Chelsea, who did you think about for this?
I really didn't want to be offensive or make a statement because of who Caitlyn Jenner is now.
Right.
So I just went with somebody that I want to see in short denim shorts and a cutoff shirt.
Uh-huh.
So I went with Jason Momoa.
That's hilarious.
Love it.
I think that was great. Aquaman indeed.
Mm-hmm.
Sean?
I idolized Bruce Jenner when I was about 5 years old, I guess. Because, because he had made his debut in the Olympics in track and field.
He was on Wheaties.
Huh?
He was on the Wheaties box.
Yeah, he was totally on the Wheaties box. And he was everything back then. And to see him jump into this role, it's just kind of sad. But I bring up the Olympics thing for a reason. My actor hasn't done much in quite a while. He was in the High School Musical movies 1, 2, and 3, and a bit of a face value pick. There's even a scene where he did a basketball dance routine.
Yes.
Okay. But he is an athlete. His passion in life is ice hockey. And he was the child of light in the 2002 Winter Olympic Games opening and closing ceremonies. His name is Ryan Sanborn.
Mm-hmm. Ryan Sanborn.
Chelsea knows who I'm talking about. He played Jason Cross.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well then.
Jason Cross on what?
High School Musical.
High School Musical.
I never watched High School Musical.
Well, you're missing out.
Apparently. That's cool. That's a good connection, though. My actor is British. He is 30 now. He was in one of the Robin Hood remakes. He was in The Kingsman. He was in Eddie the Eagle. And he's recently gotten critical acclaim for playing an LGBTQ character in Rocket Man. His name is Taron Egerton.
Good job.
See how politically correct that was?
Yeah, that was nice.
I did a good job.
Good job.
All right, now for the gayest part. the next quote unquote role that we're going to recast is the actual Village People playing themselves. And how many members of the Village People were there?
Six?
Yes.
Okay. And Chelsea, what did you have in mind for this?
I'm a girl.
Yes.
So if I wanted to see something gay, I'm going to cast a female group.
Okay.
So I went with the Pussycat Dolls.
Pussycat Dolls. I see what you did there. Very cool.
Right.
And Sean.
It's kind of low-hanging fruit for me. And I guess you could take that in many ways. But the only band that I could think of that would fit the Village People is the laughably named Northern Ireland band Boyzone.
Yes.
Boyzone.
Yes.
And I'm holding up a before and after picture. Yes. I don't know what happened to one of the band members. Dana could probably tell us because she knows all things Irish. But they look just as manly as they did back then in their current picture.
So I did say that I was kind of trying to make this a more serious picture. And I had to kind of flip the script a little bit on the Village People, because their whole thing was that even though they were gay icons, they were macho, right?
Uh-huh. Right. Wink.
Quote unquote macho. And so I went with an extremely phenom group, especially in the past decade. And they're known for being somewhat androgynous, almost even effeminate. I'm going with the K-pop group BTS.
Yay.
Nice.
I recast them before. That's a great pick.
I have to say that I'm not going to be able to recommend this movie.
Dear God, don't watch this movie. Don't.
Especially the YMCA number.
Oh my goodness.
A lot of dongs.
Travis, I'm still mad at you.
I'm still having nightmares.
We're fighting.
And so that's a not recommend all the way around, right?
I say, please stop the music.
Yes.
Please. All right. Well, that's going to bring us into our bonus segment tonight, which is a battle royale between two women who both have vied for the queen of the 70s. The first is Donna Summer. The second is Diana Ross.
Donna Summer.
Because it's a disco movies episode and she was more disco than Diana Ross.
Also, like, her ambition in Thank God It's Friday.
Yep.
She'd win.
Yep.
Okay, are you agreeing with that?
I agree. It's Donna Summer for me.
All right, we're going to be unanimous. I'm also picking Donna Summer because not only was she a contender for Queen of the 70s, she was the unanimous Queen of Disco.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Let's go ahead and wrap it up. I want to thank you, Chelsea, for being our guest today.
Thanks for having me.
Is there anything you'd like to plug?
Disco movies. They brighten up quarantine. Except we can't stop the music.
Has anybody watched OBX or Outer Banks on Netflix?
No. No.
It's actually pretty good.
All right.
Look into it.
So, Sean, anything you want to plug?
Yes, I want to plug injecting disinfectants. It's really working for me.
Oh. Now, Lysol or Clorox?
Both.
Combo.
Totally. And
it's a sanitary cocktail.
And to get your UV, I suggest eating a bowl full of light bulbs.
And Tide Pods.
Totally.
Also, thank you for everything that you do week in and week out. Do you know what next week's episode is?
I used to. Is it the James Brown episode?
Yeah!
Oh, my.
In celebration of his 87th birth date on May 3rd, we're talking the movie roles of James Brown. Now, he's in a few movies. Most of the time, he played himself. One of his earliest movie appearances was in the 1965 comedy Ski Party, which is basically a beach blanket bingo movie, but set on the ski slopes. And he appeared along with his very first band. It was an R&B band. And the question is, what was the name of the R&B group with whom James Brown began his professional career?
The Godfathers.
No.
The Ski Bunnies.
Do you mean Snow Bunnies?
No, I'm changing it to Ski Bunnies because of the title of the movie.
And because of the cocaine connotations.
Yeah.
All right. Well, the actual answer is the Fabulous Flames.
Oh, I love it. I want to be in that band.
James Brown's first group that he began his career with and appeared in two movies with was the Fabulous Flames. And so I want to plug the podcast itself. Please rate, review, and subscribe to us on iTunes or whatever podcatcher app it is that you happen to be hearing us right now. We're also hosted online at Cinema Chop Shop on Podbean. So it's podbean.com. Just search for Cinema Chop Shop. Twitter, we are at Cinema Chop Shop. Facebook / Cinema Chop Shop. CinemaChopShop at gmail.com for emails. And then our Untapped, the beers that we check in, we will check those in on Untapped. That's UNTAPPD. And we are Cinema Chop Shop on there as well. Finally, I want to thank you, the listeners, and thank you for tuning in. Thank you for picking us to spend some of your quarantine time with. And please remember to watch, chop, retrofit.
And tip your mirror balls.
And do the hustle.
Tip your curbside.